Some men have issued apologies in which they admit to some of their allegations, some of the allegations against them. Some have been removed from their positions, their power diminished, if not destroyed. The list of powerful men accused of similar behavior to Harvey Weinstein has grown longer by the day. Kevin Spacey, actor, Brett Ratner, film producer, Mark Halperin, NBC journalist, Michael Oreskes, NPR executive, Roy Moore, Senate candidate, who now says he will sue the Washington Post over its recent report alleging he pursued sexual relationships with teenagers. At this point, the most important question to ask is not who will be next, but what can be done to stop the harassment, to change work cultures. Nicole Buchanan is an associate professor in the psychology department at Michigan State University. She is a clinical psychologist who was a 2016 fellow of the American Psychological Association. She focuses on sexual harassment, racial harassment, and mental health. Nicole, welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, from a mental health perspective, is it good for victims of sexual harassment or assault to see so many others talking about their survival, talking about this issue right now?
It's absolutely beneficial. What you see is that they go from feeling isolated and alone to feeling like there's a community. They weren't necessarily targeted because there was something wrong with them. So it can be very helpful to have that sense of not being alone.
Is there a harm in it? Can harm be done?
There are times when seeing and reliving the event comes as a result of having watched other cases on the news. It can actually trigger undesired memories of the event. It can create perhaps another traumatic image in your head about what was going on and what could have happened. So it can be harmful, but overall, over time, it's much better to have that community.
Often people who survive sexual assault question whether the abuse is their fault. They did something wrong. What is the role of guilt in the silence surrounding sexual harassment?
That's a great question. Many women that I've worked with who've experienced sexual harassment, whether they were individuals involved with a class action lawsuit or they were clients that came to my office to help in coping with this, talk about a period of time where they didn't want to go forward because they did feel like they were to blame somehow or there was something about them that triggered the person targeting them. Sometimes this may have been that initially they were being playful and bantering, or maybe initially they wanted to think the person was flirting with them. But for many women, there is a period of time where they feel ashamed or they feel guilty about it, and that keeps them silent.
And so how does guilt apply, this guilt they're carrying, how does that apply to survivors who are speaking out now, who are saying, me too?
In some ways, I think it goes back to that sense of community. You have enough people saying that this has happened, and you realize that you don't have to live in the shadows. You don't have to feel the shame. And you begin to frame the blame appropriately on the perpetrator.
So sexual harassment, some say, oh, it's just casual conversation. It's less overt. Do people diminish their experience? Do people look back at a situation and try to dismiss it?
Oh, absolutely. There's lots of different ways in which people will try to cope with things like harassment that's occurring. And it's very common to, at first, maybe give the person the benefit of the doubt, make assumptions that the person wasn't trying to be hurtful, maybe tell themselves that it's not a big deal. But over time, often it worsens, it becomes more severe, maybe more frequent. Maybe they've made multiple attempts to get the perpetrator to stop and the person is not stopping, and it becomes difficult to keep rationalizing that it's not that big a deal.
We're talking right now with Nicole Buchanan. She is an associate professor in the psychology department at Michigan State University. She focuses on sexual harassment, racial harassment, and mental health. And we're discussing sexual harassment in the wake of so many allegations and apologies coming forward right now, everywhere from Hollywood to other industries where workplace harassment and other situations have come out. Do you witness sexual harassment at work? Do you stay with the organization or did you leave? 800-642-1234. How do you think about any workplace differently now versus before the harassment took place? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Nicole, let's take a look inside corporate America for a moment. When you look at the numbers, the business world is a place where truly men call the shots. At all S&P 500 companies, just 26.5% of senior and executive level managers are female. 5.2% of CEOs are female. That's according to the women's advocacy nonprofit Catalyst. When you have male and female leadership strikingly out of balance, how does that impact the culture and the climate for harassment to occur?
Oh, that's a great question. One of the things we know happens is when the numbers are skewed in an environment, it can result in increased rates of harassment. So when women are underrepresented, they are more likely to experience these things, particularly when they are in a position that threatens men around them. So a woman who is in line to be promoted, if there are men who believe that that was their promotion by right, they are far more likely to target her as a way of kind of putting her back in her place. And we know that highly masculinized environments, which many business atmospheres are, there's even a higher rate of harassment targeting women or people that have a marginalized identity of some sort.
So, give us an example of highly masculinized environments in the work world.
For example, police departments, fire departments, the U.S. military, places are very often construction, places where there are far more men, and it's generally considered acceptable to engage in hypermasculine behaviors like bullying, where there's a strong hierarchy and there's a sense of the people below you not having the same value. You're going to have increased rates of harassment.
So what have you seen come out of the evolution of HR departments, human resource departments, to address this harassment going on in the workplace?
Thankfully, HR departments have gotten much better in how they handle complaints about harassment. There was a time where there was no one to report to, and harassment was not seen as a problem, and you couldn't do anything about it. But now most workplaces have policies that directly target what to do if somebody is harassing you. Very often they may have information posted in common areas that say who you should talk to if this is happening, what your rights are. We also know that there's often reporting mechanisms, and some institutions even have ways that you can report events happening if you're a bystander, perhaps even reporting it anonymously. And another development that's actually been quite helpful is giving the target of the harassment more options and choices in how it should be addressed. Because contrary to popular belief, very often targets do not want to have severe action, especially if the harassment is relatively early. They just want it to stop. So often they're looking for ways to get HR to perhaps offer additional training or tell the person directly, perhaps putting something in their file saying that this behavior has to stop, as opposed to having the person fired, as an example.
But why don't they want a harsher crackdown? Why don't they want to really come down forcefully on the situation?
The targets are HR.
Targets. Yeah, the people who are being targeted. I mean, is it because they're concerned about their career growth? Is there something else underlying in the organization going on where they might feel compromised?
There can be several different reasons. One thing we know does absolutely happen is that people who report often become the target for retaliation from that person as well as other employees in the workplace. They can be labeled as kind of an outsider as a result. So very often they want to have the behavior stop, but they don't want to risk being targeted by other people in the organization. They often can be concerned about, if this gets out that I was a whistleblower, then no one's going to want to promote me. Maybe they'll find a way of firing me. If there are alternative ways that they can suggest HR deal with the problem, you also will see that people will report it earlier. So perhaps the behaviors haven't gotten so severe that they are afraid to go to work every day or afraid to be around this person, and having the behavior simply stop would be sufficient.
So what might some of those alternatives that HR uses, what would these alternatives look like?
Well, having a formal intervention where they're telling the person that these are the behaviors that we have been reported, these behaviors are unacceptable, this is your first and last warning, if this occurs again, here are what the consequences will be. Having them re-engage with sexual harassment training, all the things that communicate that the organization takes this behavior seriously and finds it unacceptable and will not tolerate it continuing.
We've been hearing about organizations that have employees who have a record, who have had that intervention, that perhaps milder intervention, and yet nothing's been done. And there have been some strong words against these organizations saying, you know what, that is not acceptable. You should have taken much stronger action because many more women are coming forward. Does the number of targets, the number of people being targeted by this person, does that impact the situation for the company?
Absolutely. In fact, it's incredibly foolish for companies not to take any reports seriously, because very often we know that very few people will actually go as far as making a formal report. So by the time someone does make a formal report, it's probably been going on for a long time. It's probably become very severe, and it's probably something that is impacting many employees in that organization. And we know that when people are experiencing harassment, you see lowered productivity, work disengagement, often leaving the job. And that comes at a very, very high price to the organization. There's concerns with having to hire again, train again. That's lost time for all the other employees that are doing the training. That's lost time for what you could have had that former employee doing to advance the organization.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, and we also have to remember that the costs of harassment are not merely on the target. Other individuals in the organization that are aware that it's happening also suffer negative consequences to work productivity and a higher likelihood of leaving the organization.
We've seen a groundswell of public testimonies and a growing number of firings. Question is, will it lead to lasting change across industries? Will this stream of reckonings, if you will, come to a stop when the news cycle decides to move on? Will CEOs, the corner offices, the boardrooms congratulate themselves on rooting out bad apples and call the problem fixed? Harassment in the workplace, changing workplace culture. Your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Nicole Buchanan stays with us. She's an associate professor in the psychology department at Michigan State. She is a clinical psychologist who was a 2016 fellow of the American Psychological Association. Did you witness sexual harassment at work? Do you stay with the organization? Do you leave? What is your story? 800-642-1234. We'll return in a moment. Some people are wondering out loud whether the pendulum is swinging too far. While sexual assault is clearly out of bounds, should we be careful about over-punishing men for lesser offenses? It's true that since the Harvey Weinstein revelations, women have been reporting a range of experiences from inappropriate behavior to sexual assault. What are the appropriate consequences? How are they leveled? How do you change work-life culture? Clinical psychologist Nicole Buchanan is an associate professor in the psychology department at Michigan State, where she focuses on sexual harassment. You can join in 800-864-2124. How do you think your workplace has changed over the years? Have you seen sexual harassment in your work culture? 800-642-1234. You can also post observations and questions over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And let's go to Kendra now in Milwaukee. Hi, Kendra.
Hi there. I had wanted to mention, in addition to the consequences within a corporation of, you know, revealing sexual harassment. Now, if people don't receive satisfaction there and wind up going, you know, public, as you say, they have the additional, you know, problem with female hating trolls that will attack them on the internet, find out what their email address is, what their address is, what their phone number is. And some of the conservative blogs have even done this to feminist commentators. Literally, they turn their readership on these women for, you know, expressing what we truly feel.
So, Nicole, Kendra, very concerned about trolls.
We are seeing that this kind of behavior has increased, and it is creating an atmosphere where there's a lot of fear, and it's very silencing. So, absolutely, it's one of those concerns that warrants attention. It's worth thinking about.
And so what should women do if they get in the situation where, as Kendra mentioned, you know, sometimes entire groups are harassing a particular person for their viewpoint and doing it all in online, in that community, online?
Oh, that's a difficult one. If things cross certain lines, sometimes you can go to the police and have them talk to the individuals, but this new wave of online harassment is not being handled very well. It's going faster. It's changing faster than our laws are changing to protect individuals. So it is an incredibly difficult situation to have stop. And knowing the right course of action, I'm not sure. It's a difficult situation to be in.
Kendra, thank you so much for your call and for your perspective. Let's go to John in Madison, who joins us. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I just wanted to ask a question and make a comment. How much do you think of this sexual harassment has to deal with power dynamic, and how much is regarding hypermasculinity and gender? And just a quick story, I was working as a legal assistant at a law firm, and I had a female attorney who was a supervisor who sexually harassed me quite badly. I ended up losing about 3 days worth of work due to the stress, and just like to hear your opinion about power dynamics when it comes to these situations. And I'll take my answer off air.
Nicole, go ahead.
That is an excellent question, and I'm so glad that the caller brought this up, because we tend to believe that harassment is about misguided attraction or misguided flirting. That's kind of what's out there in popular culture. But what we know is harassment is almost always about power, about establishing dominance over someone else, asserting. And this is why you will see men harassing other men, even though it's non-sexual. You will see even subordinates harassing a female boss because they're trying to establish dominance.
So with the caller experience, I mean, that was incredibly unfortunate. And there are situations where women are the perpetrators. It's extremely rare, but there are those situations. And it still seems to come down to the same thing, trying to establish power and dominance. We know sometimes it's also about policing perhaps gender role norms if somebody is perceived as violating those norms. But it's never about attraction.
John, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story and bringing this up. Nicole, we have been hearing this call out there. Are we going too far? Is the pendulum swinging too far? We know sexual assault is out of bounds, but are we over-punishing men for lesser offenses, perhaps that occurred decades ago?
It's unfortunate that these things have taken decades to come to light, and that the punishment is coming so far after the event. But these so-called lesser offenses certainly are not lesser offenses to the targets. We see people who have increased rates of depression and anxiety. Perhaps they leave their field. They leave not only their workplace, but their profession. I mean, their lives can be profoundly changed as a result of these events. What I would much prefer to see, rather than harshly punishing these individuals 20 years later, is I'd like to see comprehensive changes made so that people are not violating these boundaries, so that people are not having these experiences in the first place, and that when someone starts to cross the line, there are effective interventions so that it doesn't build to that more extreme behavior.
Before we get to some of these comprehensive changes, do you think, though, in America's workspaces, do we create an expectation for women and men that putting up with harassment is perhaps part of the job?
There are certainly some professions where there is an unwritten norm that you're going to have to just put up with it. Again, when you go back to those hyper-masculine environments, the military, policing, construction, that's where you see targets often saying, well, you know, it's part of the job. It's part of what I have to do if I'm going to be here at all.
And what about intern situations where the power dynamics are so great and an intern who may not be have any benefits, may not be pulling salary, or may not have protections?
And also that person may need these letter of recommendations to go on into their future careers.
Yeah.
So they're a highly vulnerable population, yes.
So what would you tell organizations as, you know, something that they absolutely should start out doing for being on the path for comprehensive changes?
Well, everything starts, in my opinion, with leadership. We know that when leadership models appropriate behavior, you see that the employees follow the appropriate behavior. And when leadership demonstrates that they're going to be inappropriate, it tells the employees that the organization is tolerant of sexual harassment, and that's going to increase the rates of harassment dramatically. So you want to start with a clear message that's coming from leadership that guides their behavior and guides what they are publicly communicating to the employees. So having lots of information available to people on what to do if it happens, taking that very first report or even the whisperings, because again, it takes a lot before people go to report that it's happening. But if HR and leadership are actively seeking out that information, they can intervene earlier, which actually protects the organization from liability later. So it's a smart course of action, but it also protects their employees from having these kinds of experiences. And that has larger comprehensive positive effects.
We're talking right now with Nicole Buchanan. She's an associate professor of psychology at Michigan State. Getting your thoughts as well. Are you a man in a powerful role at work? Maybe you've seen other men abuse their authority. How do you prioritize respect for all workers in your workplace? 800-642-1234 to join the discussion. Let's go to Steve now in Milwaukee. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I just have a question about when you're dealing with this, you have to deal with the power dynamics at work, and you have to deal with a lot of internal things. But how do you begin this conversation with people at home? It's very difficult to broach it and to deal with, you know, explaining why it's important.
When you say how to deal with this at home, can you tell us a little bit more what you're thinking and wondering?
Well, with your family, first off, I mean, dealing with it at work is hard enough. But when you have to go back and discuss this with a spouse or a partner or even children or your parents as to why you are pursuing something or why you feel that this is important enough to have to report at work and endanger your job or even possibly, you know, suffer the consequences of leaving that position.
Go ahead, Nicole.
Yeah, that would be very difficult. I imagine it's incredibly difficult for most targets of harassment. Hopefully, in an ideal world, people would have family members that would be very supportive and seeing that it's taking a negative toll on their well-being would want them to take corrective action to kind of restore their health and well-being. But this, of course, is not always the case. And if someone is taking an action that may cost them their job, that often can be very frightening for family. One of the things I imagine would be most helpful is really emphasizing the kinds of negative consequences that the person is experiencing as a result and asking their family members to help them think of ways to mitigate some of the potential negative harm. So whether it's, you know, what are other kinds of job possibilities I should start applying for, and perhaps looking for alternatives to minimize the potential harm.
Steve, thank you so much for calling in with that. Nicole, many of the men accused of harassment in the news business and in Hollywood are out of jobs. They're out of careers, and opportunities are vanishing instantly. Is this swift societal justice through professional destruction? Is that real justice, or should this be up to courts?
I am concerned when we see individuals who, at a mere accusation, their lives have been decimated. If people have engaged in these behaviors, if there is ample evidence that it's happened, I do think that there should be consequences that map onto the offense. My concern is that if we don't necessarily have due process, if we don't have the necessary facts to support that these things have happened, then we could very easily be taking someone who is innocent of the charges and destroying their lives. Now, thankfully, we know that individuals very rarely falsely report these behaviors. So we can have some confidence just based on the stats that it's likely that these things are true. But I share the concern that this can become a witch hunt where people are accused and prosecuted and their lives are decimated before there's actually been any due process.
And brings to mind Senate candidate from Alabama, Roy Moore, in the Washington Post, you know, going on the record, interviewing the targets who were teenagers when Roy Moore was in his 30s, and the Washington Post doing this type of interviewing that perhaps would be best suited for a court hearing.
It will absolutely complicate the legal proceedings when you have this kind of public attention on it. Sometimes these things have passed the statute of limitations and they're never going to make it to court. And being interviewed is a way that the victims can have some voice and have some validation around their story and their experiences. It also can be really important to have their stories out there because, again, it reaches those individuals who haven't reported anything yet, who haven't talked about it, who are actively experiencing it, and helping then come to grips with the idea that this is wrong, that this does constitute harassment, and to start seeking out support from friends and family and coworkers, as well as considering what are the organizational options that they have. And without some public discussion of that and awareness, those actions happen far too late.
Let's take another call now. Linda in Heartland. Hi, Linda. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Okay, I had two comments. The first comment is that I'm a part-time professor for a college, and one of the things that they make us do every year is to take an online course about harassment, and one of, you know, sexual harassment is one of the things that they talk about, you know, as well as like racial and other types. But so they clearly define what it is, and they let you know that if you are engaged in that, you know, what steps to take, or if you see it, what steps to take. And the second thing that I had to say was that, so in my full-time job, I was actually in a situation where one of the supervisors in another department, he was sexually harassing me, but I don't think he realized what he was doing. It was more of like a, he just thought he was being cute and flirtatious, and every way that I tried to push him back, he just kept throwing it out there until, you know, I did go to my supervisor, I reported it. I know that after, you know, it did stop for a little while, but then soon it came back, and I really felt it was because he didn't exactly realize what it was, and that's when I thought, if they made people take this online class, it would define it, and he would see how annoying and difficult that was. And eventually, I actually did leave that job, and that was part of the reason why I did. That's all I got.
Linda, thank you so much for calling in. Kind of a two-part question, though. So first of all, do these harassment videos work that so many employees watch, perhaps take questions on in the end to make sure they understand?
There's a lot of benefit to having regular training such as these videos. There is evidence that these video trainings are helpful, and they're helpful in protecting the organization as well as helpful in disseminating what kind of things are harassment, giving lots of examples of harassment, and telling people what the procedures are should it occur. And this is helpful because it not only is reaching out to the perpetrators and the targets, but it's informing all of the bystanders that are aware of these things happening but don't know what to do about it. So, yes, one of the big recommendations is that there is annual training that addresses this, that the policy around harassment is disseminated to all employees once again. And I liked what the caller said, that the harassment their institution does, they're being comprehensive in talking about multiple types of harassment, because when you see an environment where one type of harassment is existing, other kinds of harassment are also proliferating. So we need to have ways in which the training is out there and it's comprehensive, it's happening on a regular basis. And again, that leadership is talking about valuing the individuals, not having an environment with any harassment, and that it's not tolerated in their business.
A recent Washington Post ABC News poll found a third of women said they had experienced sexual advances from a male colleague or a man with influence over their job. A third of those women said the advances rose to the level of sexual abuse. That poll from last month found a solid majority of Americans now say that sexual harassment in the workplace is, quote, a serious problem in our country. What do we do? How do you change the culture? We're talking with clinical psychologist Nicole Buchanan. She's an associate professor of psychology at Michigan State. Your thoughts as well, 800-642-1234. If you are in a leadership role in your organization, how do you prioritize respect for all workers? Have you kept quiet about something that happened to you or a colleague? 800-642-1234, or post your thoughts on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back to this conversation in just a moment. Thank you. The consequences of experiencing harassment can be severe. We've heard in recent weeks women describing not just feeling unsafe or uncomfortable with a man, but feeling that their careers were derailed as a result of the situation and a feeling like they had nowhere to turn. What can be done to shift power imbalances in the workplace? What can be done to help women feel safe at work and men feel safe at work as well? Will this problem persist? 800-642-1234. Nicole Buchanan stays with us. She's an associate professor in the psychology department at Michigan State, and she is a clinical psychologist who was a 2016 fellow of the American Psychological Association. Let's take another call now. Let's go to Dan in Rhinelander. Hi, Dan. Go ahead.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. This is coming from the small business sector. I am a business owner of between 15 and 25 employees. I find that there is no resources to help the business person in this situation. I had a male employee, what I considered sexually harassing another male employee, it was a swat on the behind and it kept up. I gave verbal warnings, I gave written warnings, two written warnings, and then finally released the employee that was, doing the actions. And this came down to an unemployment case, and I lost that case, and I don't know what else I could have did or did anything different to protect myself in that matter. I mean, I followed the rules by verbal and written warnings, and still, I mean, not to mention my time involved to pursue this case, but the financial loss in releasing the employee, retraining a new employee, and I still lost an employment case. I feel that there's not enough resources for the small business sector to protect against this.
Yeah, let's get Nicole to come in on this. Nicole, what do you think of Dan's situation here?
Well, it sounds awful, and it's incredibly unfortunate that that happened in that way, because it ends up discouraging people from taking appropriate action. And it sounds like what he did was completely appropriate. He followed all the rules, and there should have been reasonable support around that. So I commend him, and I wish I could have had some influence in changing that outcome, because that's not the way this should happen.
Are there resources out there for small business owners to really get their hands around this problem? And, when you have a business that has 15 employees, 20 employees?
There are training opportunities that can be more affordable, such as having video training, and there's organizations that offer computerized online training. Of course, having people come out to the organization is far more expensive. But those are all preventative methods. Once it's already happened and you're facing a situation such as the caller described, I'm imagining he's correct, that there really are not very many resources, certainly not good resources and readily available resources for those in small business who can't afford some of these larger scale interventions or the legal assistance to protect from outcomes such as these.
And it leads me also to believe that when the environment is such a small, close-knit staff, who everyone knows everyone in that organization, it's perhaps more difficult to keep something like a write-up or a reprimand private in a much smaller organization.
I imagine that would be the case. There's plenty of reason to believe that would be the case. But it's also that in a small organization like that, there's probably widespread knowledge that these events are happening, mm-hmm. and it's causing negative consequences for many of that, for a large proportion of that 15 to 25 employees, which can have even more dramatic consequences for the organization, because you only have 25 employees and 20 are negatively impacted by witnessing the harassment.
Sure. Yeah, seriously, compromising the organization. Dan, thank you so much for calling in. Let's go to Don now in Eagle River. Hi, Don.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
Just a couple of comments on, first of all, things being kind of hashed out in the media and protecting people's innocence. You know, our country is set on the judicial premise of you are innocent until proven guilty. And it seems like a lot of these cases tend to go the other way. People are assumed guilty. And then even when they are proven innocent, or if they are, you know, that's still a hard road, and a lot of their life has been destroyed. And then the other comment I had was about culture, changing the culture in our country. And I think a lot of that goes back to our pop culture, our movies, our TV, our music. You know, a lot of sexual harassment, specifically against women, is proliferated in these areas, and it, of course, is going to overflow into our society.
Don, thank you so much for those observations. Nicole, first of all, tackle this idea, guilty until proven innocent.
You know, we're in a strange time where throughout most of history, people that would bring forth these kind of allegations were presumed to be the ones that were lying, and the perpetrator was often not sanctioned, not punished, perhaps not even investigated. So we've had this pendulum swing that has the potential to be very problematic, because you don't want people to see making false accusations as a way of getting revenge on someone else. Again, the research shows that that's very, very rare, but if that happens at all, it's unacceptable. So we definitely need to be cautious about the rush to punish individuals before we actually know what's going on.
The other part of Don's question, are we instigating harassment? Is there a tie between the media we're consuming and harassment happening in our worlds and at work?
There absolutely is a connection, but the connection goes both ways. The media images we see perpetuate the idea that women are to be sexualized, women are less valuable than men, and so we see that in our social media, and that trickles down into our everyday interactions. But at the same time, that media exists because it is a true reality in our day-to-day lives. So we need this larger cultural change if we're going to have kind of permanent, comprehensive change within workplaces.
Don, thank you so much for calling in. And do women, Nicole, who go to other jobs after experiencing harassment, and in the case Linda mentioned, moving on from her job, do they take that baggage, if you want to call it that, with them? Is it harder for the safeguards in place to work when people no longer trust the system?
Absolutely does. Absolutely does. We have to remember that, especially if it's been ongoing, if it's been more severe, individuals can experience symptoms that are indistinguishable from PTSD that comes from more severe assault or from being in warfare. So they have these traumatic responses, and then they are going to another workplace, but that's still present for them. And so they might be less trusting. They might be more hypervigilant. They may be less invested in the workplace because they expect that the individuals around them might do them harm.
Let's take another call now. Let's go to Brian in Milwaukee. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Thank you for calling me, or taking my call.
Sure.
Just a couple observations. First of all, our concern about harassers may be overdone. The people have been in authority have been free to act in the manner that they choose, with very little regard to those being harassed. Allowing the pendulum to swing in this direction might be better off for society in all aspects. Because I had a conversation with my wife, and years ago when she was 19, she was sexually harassed. by one of her teachers, and she chose not to say anything because she thought it was going to adversely affect her career. Now, this is an incredibly intelligent woman, and to hear her come, hear this come out of her mouth just stupefied me. I've been in a position of authority for 35 years, and I have seen the vulnerability of people, both male and female, that make them that predatory individuals can sense. And I'm afraid that their actions will continue until they realize that even one inappropriate action could have detrimental effects upon them. I'm sorry, I have to run with patience, but thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. Have a nice day.
All right, thank you so much, Brian, for calling in. Nicole, what do you make of what Brian had to say?
You know, there's a part of me that is concerned, and there's a part of me that agrees. There has been some benefit to the kind of publicity and the very negative publicity that has come along with this information being disclosed. It is educating a larger populace. It is getting information out to the general public so that more people are having these conversations, more people are talking about the negative consequences of experiences that they may have had 10 years ago. And that conversation wasn't happening before this came out. So there is a way in which this is doing good. There is concern about it perhaps going too far, that you might see innocent people that are being harshly punished. But we can't deny that there's absolutely been some benefit to having this kind of attention on the issue.
And as we start to wrap up here, Nicole, where do you see this conversation on harassment going next?
I hope there's two pieces that continue. One, organizations being more active in seeking out information about whether or not harassment is happening, seeking it out early on, and then appropriately responding. And I hope they continue to look at innovative ways of training their employees and getting the message out there that it's unacceptable. The other direction is that, going back to, I think, the caller before this last one, looking at what we are saying as a society and how that may be contributing to permissive environments where harassment occurs.
Well, Nicole, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Nicole Buchanan is a clinical psychologist and associate professor in the psychology department at Michigan State University. She was a 2016 fellow of the American Psychological Association, and she focuses on sexual harassment, racial harassment, and mental health. This hour of the morning show was produced by Keely Baltina. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation comes to you on the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for listening.